Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When my son was 6 years old, I took him to a birthday party.
And we was the only black people there, right? And I'm hearing people clapping, right? Go.
I looked in the middle, my son in there doing shit that wasn't even part of his generation and shit. This nigga.
What the fuck's that?
Nigga, set our fucking family back with that shit. Like, let nigga get out that goddamn circle.
You guys, it's a last laugh birthday party for Lil Rel Howery. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast. Lil Rel is turning 40 years old this week, and he's here to talk about his brand new HBO special, Live in Crenshaw. His friend and fellow comic Gerard Carmichael directed it, and it's unlike any other stand-up special released this year, or any other year for that matter. Gerard and Rel filmed it in a high school gym in the middle of the afternoon. As Rel performs his stream of consciousness material, we end up watching the sunset behind him until he's bringing down the house in near darkness. It's not only hilarious, but it's beautiful to watch as well. Rel tells me in this episode that he literally had no idea what he was going to say when he walked on stage. Unlike most comedians who methodically work out their sets months before taping a special, Rel just put trust in his talent and hoped for the best. The fact that it worked out as well as it did is kind of a miracle. And it's not like he had a lot of time to drop in at comedy clubs to prepare. Starting with 2017's Get Out, he provided comic relief as the TSA agent Rod. Rel has appeared in 8 movies over the past 3 years, as well as created and starred in his own sitcom for Fox and popped up in recurring roles on shows like Insecure and Southside. He's got at least 7 more films coming out in 2020. So we were super lucky that he made time to be on our last new episode of 2019. But real quick, I want to take this opportunity to thank everyone who has been listening to The Last Laugh from the beginning, and those who are checking it out for the first time today. If you haven't already, please help us out by leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And also, please give us a follow on Instagram at Last Laugh Pod. And now, please enjoy my conversation with Lil Rel Howery. It's a good one. Well, thanks for coming in. We're talking the day before the HBO special drops. So how you feeling?
Really excited. You know, it's still surreal to have an HBO special.
Yeah.
But I'm just excited for the people to see. I mean, you know, when you've been looking at something for so long, at some point you're like, I think it's good. I can't keep watching this. I need to see if anybody else gonna like it.
So. How long ago did you tape it?
We taped it in July.
Oh, wow. So it has been quite a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the special. I got to see the screener of it before this. And then I think by the time this podcast comes out, it'll be out so we can talk about it and
people
will have seen it. But yeah, it looks very different from other specials, which is good for standing out. I mean, and you taped it during sort of in the afternoon into the evening in a high school gym.
Yeah.
So that was Gerard Carmichael's idea, or how did that kind of
He suggested the gym, and then when I saw it, that's when I was asking him, like, yo, is there any way we could do it where the sun is setting?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And he was like, yeah. Because
they have the big windows.
Big window. When you see that window, it's just something interesting, especially the way the light comes in. Like, are we able to, like, pop on, you know, a spotlight at the – like, you know, we did it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is, I don't know if we even thought about, like, trying to do something different. It was just trying to create the environment that reminded me of the environments I did early in my career. So I would do those gyms and
during Mason, the day or at night.
It wasn't even about the time, but I mean, I'm talking about the environment, the place.
Yeah.
Those were comedy shows I've done earlier in my career.
Yeah,
and I thought that was cool to do, to actually pay homage to. I mean, to the shows I did earlier in the Chipman circuit of it. You know what I'm saying? And You know, the great thing about my career so far is that I'm able to do, I'm doing all these movies and doing all this big stuff that I could literally just do the comedy special the way I wanted to do it and didn't need to make the special my big thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was just what I wanted it to be.
Yeah, because you have so much else going on. Does that feel like there's less riding on it because of that?
Exactly. So I could do what I want to do. Like, it's not like, you know, because I think sometimes people put weight on their specials because they're like, this special got to be great because this is how I'm going to get my road gigs, this is how I'm going to make my money.
Yeah. And maybe it's the biggest thing they do all year.
Exactly. That ain't.
Yeah,
that ain't my ministry.
I was gonna ask. I mean, you're so busy. You're in so many things.
Yeah.
I mean, how did you have time to prepare for the special?
I didn't. Be honest with you, because I toured the first few months earlier this year, and we were supposed to shoot this in March.
Oh yeah.
And Gerard's schedule and my schedule, and we ended up couldn't do it. And you know, I had other films I was filming, so I didn't really have time to prepare for it. I think I went up one day, a couple days before we got to shoot the special. I went up one day.
Yeah.
Just literally one day in Chicago. and that was just to kind of get the rust off.
Yeah. But you'd been performing in some clubs and stuff too, or not?
No,
not really.
I was shooting movies the whole time.
Yeah.
I didn't do any stand up.
Wow.
So, but that's not. I mean, I've been doing this almost 20 years, bro.
But like, you have to kind of work out the material on your own. You have to know what you're gonna say when you get up there, right? Or no?
I didn't do any of that, bro.
Yeah.
I know it sounds crazy, but but this is the thing about it. I've been doing this way too long to like not. It's like breathing to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all I asked was make sure that crowd got energy and we'll see where I go with it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know where I was going to go with it.
That's wild. Because, most people, they work out their, they're doing their specials on the road for a year before they take them.
That's lame, man, sometimes with me. I I do. And that's why, like, I'm glad I'm on, like, because even HBO, they wanted the material for. They usually do that. Legal reasons why they do it. But I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, what? I'm not going to give you a set. I don't know what I'm going to do. They like, but real, man, I've been doing this 20. I know what legally I can't say. I'm not dumb. I've been doing this too long.
Mm. Yeah.
Trust me.
I think what ends up being a big theme of the special is how success and fame has kind of changed some of your relationships with your family and made things, interesting things come out of that.
Yeah.
So was that something that you knew you wanted to be a sort of theme of it?
Yeah, I mean, because it's telling a story. It's not even just telling like this. Like, it's so funny when I describe, for instance, my uncle with the good job.
Mm-hmm.
He's not necessarily rich, but he's the one that's been taking care of things.
Yeah.
And it was always, it's a perspective of when you become the guy that everybody calls.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's not even about fame or anything. It's like, no, you become that person in your family. That's why even describing the top 15, it's really just describing the real, you become one of the decision makers. It's that transition.
Family could be tough and shit. Like my family, them motherfuckers just found out I got money for real and shit. I've been lying for like 5 years straight. I ain't shit. I've been lying like a motherfucker. You know, I've been like, I ain't got it. Let me tell you something. When you tell niggas you ain't got it, you better sound like it. You gotta sound like this. Look, I don't know what you heard, man. Shit. I mean, taxes and everything. I ain't got it, you know what I mean?
When did you feel like that happened for you? I mean, when did you become the guy that everyone looks to in your family?
Well, the first thing was when my mom passed is when I got a chance to participate in that top 15 meeting because I was the oldest. And, my aunties and my uncles were sitting down trying to figure everything out and help us out. I had to be in that meeting. I'm like, yo, y'all been doing this? Like, I was excited, kind of. I mean, it was wrong to be excited about it because it was my mom's, but it was like, at the same time, like, oh, they invited me to the grown people table and have a real conversation. I got to make plans with them. You know, so that's where that came from. And that's what I'm saying. All the stories are not, it's not one story like I told it. These are different stories. I decided to make it into one thing, which is insane to me because I didn't write it out like that. I kind of just, this is what I like to do. I like to perform things and link everything together.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a weird thing I do.
And you kind of let your stream of consciousness take you from one like thing to the other.
Yeah, it just goes to whatever the next part of that world is. You know what I'm saying? And like my openers, Rito Brown and Jay Alexander, who toured me early in the year, when I used to do those, I would do every show differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed somebody there to be like, hey, man, what you did today, that was crazy. You changed the story. Because I would do it, because it's weird. I would let like the characters take over whatever this story is.
Yeah. I've heard you say that you kind of black out when you do characters.
When I did the Dolphine Girlfriend, that might have been the first time I've ever done it. I was watching it yesterday, like, yo, I don't think I've ever done that nowhere else. Why did I do it on my special? Like, you know what I mean? Like, why did I
add
that
in? Yeah.
I didn't do it nowhere else.
Yeah. And in terms of helping you figure out what, you know, what you do want to do or how you want the special to go, how much does Gerard, who directed the special, play into that?
He just trusted me. Mm-hmm. You know, that look, I literally, Gerard believed in me in a way where it's like he was able to convince HBO that Rail know what he doing. Mm-hmm. So don't, because everybody was a little nervous, man. I'm telling you, until the taping. I feel like afterwards everybody like, whew, that was great.
Yeah.
Well, what you thought it was going to be? A disaster?
Yeah.
You're in this gymnasium. We shooting all film. Mm-hmm. It's hot.
Yeah.
We don't know what it's set
going
to be.
You're sweating through the whole thing. You can see that.
Well, that's dope, though. Like, yeah. That's something Gerard really wanted to do on purpose. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? He wanted the sweat. He wanted to show that because it has that rally feel to it. Like, you know, when you used to see Dr. King doing speeches in those churches, and it just has that real feel. I mean, you watch Aretha Franklin's documentary. What was it called? Amazing Grace? I forgot what it was.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And she's just sweating. The pastor who's hosting sweat. It wasn't nobody powdering them up. That was just, you just performed.
Yeah.
No matter how hot it was. And she was the biggest superstar in the world, was sweating her butt up on that piano.
Yeah.
But there's something beautiful about seeing that because it seems real.
Yeah, and it shows the effort too. I mean,
yeah. I mean, like, I had so much fun doing it. And, you know, Gerard is just brilliant at knowing what environment is for what comedian. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's directed a bunch of specials now, and they're all totally different.
It's specific to who the comic is.
Yeah, did the one with no audience with Drew Michael. Yeah.
That was brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, Gerard is, someday he's going to get recognized as the brilliant guy he is. I don't think he gets enough props, to be quite honest with you.
Well, you've been collaborating with him for quite a while now. Yeah. How did you guys meet?
The first time we met was at the Comedy Store. No, it was the Laugh Factory, actually. Well, maybe it was Comedy Store. One of the clubs. And he walked up to me. Beat up afro, weird hoodie, skinny kid. I'm like, who's this weirdo? And he's like, look, I'm a big fan. I'm like, all right, man, just chill, bro. Like, you know, leave me alone, you weirdo. And we started talking more. The more we talked, too, like, the more I saw, oh, he loves comedy. Mm-hmm. And we just talk. And that's so interesting. Like, him and Jermaine, all those guys, I'm much older than him. Like, I'm like 10 years almost of them. Mm-hmm. And they all irritated me when I first met them.
Yeah.
Because they had this weird energy. They were so excited. But then also, I was weirded out by it because I was doing comedy with bitter veterans for a long time. So I didn't know what nice people were, like nice comics was. And when I got to know them, all of them, the Lucas Brothers, all of them, man, I feel like it changed my career because I got a chance to meet the other comedy nerds.
Yeah, do you feel like you had more in common with the sort of younger generation?
Yeah, I felt like that was my group. But I didn't know I was influencing them, which is interesting. You know, Hannibal is somebody that's one of my good friends. Mm-hmm. And I met Hannibal when he first started. Like, he opened for me. I did his college he was going at the time. I was headlining the college. And,
he's another Chicago guy.
Another West Side of Chicago guy also.
Yeah.
But I watched this guy. He ended up like influencing a bunch of comedians. Mm-hmm. It's a generation of comics, style-wise, everything. That Hannibal is the influence. And that's just fascinating to me. Like, yo, like to be a big brother of that and then seeing, just it's just fascinating. Mm-hmm. And then you get a chance to work with these other very creative guys. Like, I love the group of comedians I work with. From Gerard to the Bros to Jermaine to Joshua Benowitz, you know, rest in peace to Kevin Barnett. Like, we all kept that really tight knit with all of us. And that's why everything always, to me, felt like it was my voice. I've never felt like I've done anything that didn't feel like it was me. Nothing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you obviously worked with Gerard on Carmichael's show. Was that a sort of big deal at the time
to get that? Yeah, NBC. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, a series regular role on a show, you know. And I remember when Gerard got the deal the first time, he's so laid back about everything. He's like, yeah, NBC. I'm like, NBC gave you a deal?
Yeah.
Why you sound so chill about it? You know what I mean? And like the first time, because it was two different versions of the Carmichael show. The first version of it, was about him and his friends, you know, and he had me like audition and read for it. I killed the audition, but I changed the character into what I wanted to be. And I remember NBC loved me, the other producers did, and I was like, so why haven't I got the call back for this? And they said, well, Gerard, he didn't like the way you did the character. I said, what? He called me to do this. Yeah. So I called him like, hey, man, what's up?
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, real. I mean, the way I wrote it, because he knows exactly what stuff is. And I'm like, all right, whatever, brother. It's your show. You know what I mean? So then he changed it into a family.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's when he was like, all right, bro, come read Bobby. Do it the way you did it. You know? And, you know, I just went and tested for it. I didn't even, I didn't audition. They just had me come straight to a test.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget testing that. That was the first time I got applause in the text.
Oh, yeah.
In the test. And it was like loud laughing. It
from
was
crazy. And who's in there? Just like the producers.
Producers. Yeah, it was crazy. And I walked out of there like, I don't know who else going after this, but
yeah,
I think this is mine.
Yeah, that must have felt good.
It felt, I mean, that's what I met Amber for the first time, Amber Stevens West. We was both, like, we met and we talked the whole time before our screen test. You almost knew who was going to be on this.
Yeah.
On this show. We all just fit. We just gelled so well together. And then even the way Tiffany got the show, you know, Tiffany was just our friend.
Tiffany had
it. She wasn't even on the show.
Yeah.
She came in because the girl they casted at first was still doing this play and couldn't come to none of the rehearsals and table reads. So Tiffany was just supposed to be at one table read.
Yeah.
She was great. Everybody loved her. Then she came back. Then we needed some help with rehearsals. Like, I remember Loretta Devine. I forgot the young lady who role it was supposed to be, but Loretta was like, she should have been here. And it was crazy because when old girl finally came, and we had Tiffany for like a couple weeks now.
Yeah.
And you got used to it. Like, yeah. I think this is Nakisha. When the real, you know, casting came, it was so funny. It was just kind of weird.
Yeah.
And I remember Tiffany came on set because she had an audition. Everybody was so happy to see her, even with the actress who was supposed to be there. And it's just a true story. I wasn't even out the lot yet when Tiffany called me and said they replaced. Oh, I'm like, she's still on set. They just, do she know she replaced? They offered you to, she, I just left her. Just, she's right 600 feet. Jesus, this is a crazy business.
Well, they knew. They knew Tiffany had it.
Tiffany, that's why, man, you better show up. Don't be letting somebody read you thinking like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right. I ain't never seen that like that before. Yeah. And that's,
I mean, the cast in that show is unbelievable, and the stuff that you guys were tackling and the issues, and I mean, it's just, it's, I thought it was really fascinating.
That's the most underrated television show ever.
That's what I was going to kind of ask is, like, do you think it didn't, it got respect,
NBC,
but didn't get maybe
it.
The
network
support.
Did support
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
The people loved it.
Yeah.
But you got to have the network help you too. You
and they were kind of moving it around and doing that thing.
They're like, the Superstore is the best comedy on NBC. Like, what?
Yeah.
So we have this show that's talking about real things that's happening. You're starting to see breakout stars come from this show.
Yeah.
But yet you promote the, you know, some shibbity dubbos. And that's why Gerard was, he walked away from it. And a lot of people didn't understand that. Like, why did he leave? Well, also, he felt like all of us should be paid more, too.
And they weren't willing to do that.
They weren't willing to do that. They was playing us, man.
First it was NBC, then it was Fox. Coming up, Rell talks about getting his own show and why he wasn't exactly upset when it got canceled. That did lead directly to you getting your own show on Fox, Rell.
Yeah.
And Gerard was involved in that as well. And I know you would have wanted, I think you would have wanted another season or for it to keep going. But
I don't know,
how do you feel about it now?
Well, I don't know even that. I think it's a couple of things. I mean, more or less anything, especially when Kevin passed, Kevin Barnett, who helped create the show, right? It was just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have been comfortable coming back. Because I did it with my friends, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that he was a huge part of it, actually, like a huge part of it.
Yeah.
That's who I would talk to every day. That's who, Josh and Kevin are brilliant. And so it was just weird. It might sound crazy, and I know some people are like, man, but what? I'm like, bro, everything happens for a reason. You know, I think the next time I come back to television, though, I want to come with two shows. And what I mean by that is, it's being paired the right way.
Yeah.
You know, they put me on with the cartoons on Sunday. And then they only promoted the animation.
It didn't feel like it fit there.
It didn't feel like they was just like, here you go. Like, it didn't make any sense why I wasn't with Tim Allen, you know, you know, because it's a comedy night of sitcoms. Like, you just didn't create a sitcom. And that's what I'm saying. Next time I do this again, I'm going to try to come with two shows so I can have my own lead in.
Yeah. What about sort of network versus, you know, doing something on Netflix or doing something on HBO or, you know, do you have a feeling of like...
It depends on what type of show it is. Like, you know, multicam is, you know, it works better on network, you know, to be honest with you. But if I think the next show I do is a single cam show. So I would, I don't even care where it goes. I just want to go where I got freedom.
Yeah, I mean, you guys were very much behind the multicam thing, Gerard, and you, and I think you stand by the sort of value of that as a an art form, as a sort of different art form.
It's
right?
A lot of work though, having your own show though.
Yeah,
you know, I think if anything, I learned, you know, and I did a lot, and I put a lot. I was probably the most stressful I've ever been, because you have to do. You really don't have no life.
Yeah.
You know, it's the show. Every you rehearse, then you go to the writer's room, then you're in there for hours, then you're going through everything again, then you go home, you wake up, you do all the acting stuff, you know the acting stuff, now you gotta do producer stuff, make all these decisions, now you're talking to casting about who you want to do this with, now you're back in the writer's room for the next few, it's a lot of work. And don't get me wrong, it was fun to do, but at the same time, it was stressful.
Is there an element of relief when it doesn't get picked up?
It was for me.
Yeah.
Like, I hate to say, I mean, it might sound crazy, but all I did was end up doing a bunch of movies.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. It's just very, I'll come back to television, even maybe more as a producer and a writer than maybe even starring in it. I don't know yet.
You had Sinbad on the show.
Oh my God, so funny.
Do you have any good Sinbad stories from your time
Sinbad
with him?
It's just funny all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the only thing that surprised me is that he cursed in real life.
Yeah.
Like, dang, Sinbad curses? Yeah. You know, but man, he's such a legend.
Yeah.
And one of those, once again, one of those people I think underappreciated.
Mm-hmm.
He's so, his timing is so good. It is absurdly crazy to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still like, I can't even believe that I'm cool with Sinbad.
Yeah. You stay in touch?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
He's like a second dad for real. He's a real dad, guys. That's my comedy father.
Yeah. Who were sort of your, when you were growing up or starting to think about wanting to be a comedian, who were the comics who you really looked up to and thought, you know, oh, if I could be like them or?
I mean, Eddie is the, you know.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, it's so funny because you hear a lot of comedians like, yeah, Eddie Murphy, but then you watch their material like, where has Eddie influenced you at?
You can definitely see it in your material with characters
and the story,
and it's, family.
It's a simple, delirious blueprint. Okay, is the daddy, the drunk daddy at the barbecue?
Yeah, are you excited to see him come back? He's doing SNL, and then he's doing a special. And
wait to see Eddie Murphy come back. And this thing, I hope he sees my special. He's the only one I haven't had a real conversation with yet. Like I've been with all my heroes, he's been the only one.
Yeah.
That I just want to sit down and rap with. I don't know if he'd notice, but like, I'm a good comic to, like, if you about to come, hey man, I'm a good comic to like sit down with if you want somebody to look at it. And, cause I, Shibbity Dobos, brother. I know what this style is.
What advice would you give to him if on coming, on making his sort of comeback and doing a new special?
Don't go away from what made you the legend, man. I want to see him tell stories and do characters. Mm-hmm. Eddie is still hysterical. Like, if you watch interviews, just interviews alone, effortless, like, without... He's still probably the funniest person in the room.
So going back to when you were starting out as a comedian, though, what do you remember about sort of the first time you got on stage or the first kind of jokes that you were telling? What was your material like then? Do you feel like it was similar to what you're doing now? Or
this is interesting. No, I think at first I tried to do the joke thing, right? You know, I was joking about wearing glasses. Like, I'm like, yeah. Well, I think my first hit bit was. Like when you get glasses, when you get to a fight, people never threaten to just punch you in the face. They always threaten to knock your glasses off. So it'd be like it'll be like, I was like, yeah, I'll be with my friends. They don't have no glasses. Like, hey man, you say something, I'm gonna punch you in the face. You say something, I'm gonna punch you in the stomach, and you, I'm gonna knock your damn glasses off your face. Like, what? You can't hit me like everybody else. That was the bit. But then, you know, I lived with two other comedians at the time, Michi Hall and Brian the Wildcat Smith. And I used to tell these stories all the time. We'd be on road trips, and I'd just be talking about my family and stuff. Oh, and they'd be in tears laughing.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, dude, why are you not doing this on stage?
Yeah.
Like, ain't nobody don't care about my family like that. Like, dude, this stuff is hysterical.
Yeah.
Now, I used to literally we'll be on the road going to different places, and I'll just be telling all these stories like I do now. And then one day, I think they just irritated me of picking on me about not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
So I just went up there like, well, let's see if they laugh at it. And I went on stage and I was talking about my mom smoking cigarettes. And it just, it killed. And I'm like, oh, well, maybe this is it.
Yeah.
And that was like me when I was like maybe like 3 or 4 years in.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
And so that those first few years, you were trying to do the joke thing. And yeah. And then did you feel like it changed after it started telling those stories?
Yeah, it changed everything. Because it was crazy. That's what I was meant to do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I was already literally doing it. Like, we'll have girls at the house, and I'll be doing characters for, like, the whole time. Like, making up. Like, I made up this garbage man character one day. It was just crazy. But everybody like, do the garbage man. But it was only if you was at the house is when you saw it.
Yeah.
You know, so that's very interesting. When I think about that now. Like, them dudes pushed me to be myself on stage and tell my stories and where I'm from, and that's what ended up being my whole blueprint to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there was a big break moment in your career in the earlier part of your career?
I think it was a couple breaks. I think you get a few of them. Like, mm-hmm. you know, the first time I ever did television was BET's Comic View.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big deal to me. You know what I mean? We shot it in New Orleans. And this was before Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting now because it was such a different energy than that happened. And it was just, but I remember they messed my name up on the check.
Yeah.
So they had to give me cash. And I ain't never been to New Orleans before. I spent every dime on Bourbon Street that night.
Mm-hmm.
I owe people money. I spent every dime. Because I didn't know it was that lit. I was just like, let's. I was just kicking it.
And you're like, I made it.
I made it. And then went back home broke. And so, what $50 you owe me? I'm like, damn.
So what was the next one after that?
Let's see. And that one of the reasons, once again, that was only because I never taped nothing. And they used to give us our tape, too. So I brought the day you tape, they give you a cassette tape, a VHS tape to take home. So my whole neighborhood came to my house to watch me on Comedy View. I'm like, yo, look at me. I don't even know if it aired, but I had the tape.
Yeah.
And then, like, it just, I kept taping stuff here and there, like Bad Boys of Comedy and all these different things. And then Who Got Jokes happened.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Bellamy's Who Got Jokes. And that started changing everything when I won an episode in Chicago. I beat out one of the top Chicago comics at the time. I mean, I was still up and coming, but I beat him.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, oh. I'm like, yeah, okay. It's about to be my city. You know, once again, it's these little breaks. And then Last Comic Standing, to me, was a break. But Who Got Jokes and Last Comic Standing to me was at the same time. I learned a lot about myself, too, as far as, like, being okay with not changing my material. Because I got eliminated, and I remember the judges was like, you know, he just told one story, and it's more like a sketch because you stayed in character and this and that. Like, basically telling me that wasn't stand-up.
Mm.
But I'm like, I've been doing this like this. Y'all ain't never heard of Eddie Murphy?
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you watch Last Comic Standing, everybody who has those quick bits are the ones who do really well on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember taking it as a gut shot, but then it made me go harder. Like, no, I ain't changing my style. Like, you don't forget you in your jokes.
Yeah.
Jokety jokes.
You weren't going to let Last Comic Standing change the way you went about things.
And I didn't, you know. And then, you know, the Just for Last Festival, you know, making new faces there. And it's so crazy that me and Dan Soder both have the specials on HBO. We were both new faces unwrapped. Mm-hmm. We was the first time they did that.
Yeah.
You know, because... I think, you know, all the other new faces had reps, so they was able to become new faces.
Mm-hmm.
That first unrep group, they had us performing in weird places. It was mm-hmm. really wasn't nobody there half the time.
Yeah.
But me and Soda stood out. We met in New York, showcased it.
Yeah, he was just on this show.
Man, that's my dude, man. It's so crazy. I was just talking to him about it. I was like, yo, you remember like how we met? Like, we were just the funniest out of whatever. We both thought each other was the funniest. Like, mm-hmm. dude, you're great. And then we became friends. So that's what's so crazy. Even watch us now, HBO specials, and we were new faces unrep. That first, the unreps is dope now. The, mm-hmm. Like, I go see the shows now. It's organized. It's a great audience. Man, when you was unrep, man, it was like, I can't even describe. It's like I was wasn't real. Yeah. Like, there go them unreps. Put them in the van. yeah, so, you know, that was a moment, like, when I did, and then and Living Color happened.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
and this was like an In Living Color reboot.
Yeah, I got casted on that, and that was a big deal because that's how I got my Hollywood started messing mm-hmm. with me.
Were you a huge In Living Color fan?
Huge fan. I couldn't believe it was coming back. Like that's mm-hmm. I remember calling Damon Jr. like, man, can you give your uncle my tape? Mm-hmm. Like I didn't know how to all because it was they ended up finding me.
Mm-hmm.
Like they literally was looking at somebody else's video on YouTube. The producer, Shauna Garr. And my video popped up after. You know how to have a suggestion? She's mm-hmm. like, what is this? And she ended up just binging it and then showing Keenan.
Wow.
I was having a terrible day.
All because
day
of YouTube?
Because of YouTube. And it wasn't even a video I posted.
Yeah.
It was some, stuff that's somebody out there, else randomly taped mm-hmm. and put out there.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was mad about for years. I'm like, well, it helped.
I guess it helped. Yeah. what was your experience actually on that show?
Man, still to this day, one of the greatest experiences of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Keenan Ivory Wayans is one of my heroes.
Yeah.
And to have him handpick me, I mean, the process was crazy, and I brought it every time. Like, mm-hmm. even when I showcased in New York, you know, all the New York comics had family and friends come out. I had nobody. It was just me and my manager, Knowledge Beckham, at the time. And I saw people trying not to laugh at me.
Mm-hmm.
Because they wanted to make sure they people got the laugh. You know what I'm saying? They were like, so, like, to bring that out of them.
Yeah.
That's why, once again, I watched the special. I'm sweating like that. That's when you know I'm bringing it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that day. I was dripping sweat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get off stage. Never met Shauna Garr before. She come hugging me. I'm like, who is this lady? She's like, I'm Shauna Garr. I'm like, oh, thank you for this. She's like, Keenan loved you. He loved you. But that's what I love about the Wayans. Them dudes got poker faces.
Yeah.
So she telling me Keenan loved me. He thought I was great. After the show, I go up to him like, what up, man? yeah, it was cool. She said... Okay.
Rel kept nailing those auditions. Coming up, he tells us how he landed the part in Get Out that changed his career. So what I want to do now is kind of go through some of your other projects that have happened over in the last few years that we didn't get to talk about yet. And if kind of a memory or story jumps to mind. But I want to start with Get Out, which was obviously another big break for you on the acting front, and you've kind of, I feel like since then, have done tons of movies, and you have a lot more coming up.
Yeah.
So how did you end up connecting with Jordan Peele, and how did that actually happen?
He told me, well, it's interesting. Me and Jordan met at the Just for Last Festival.
Okay.
We met the first time. One random year too. We both was lit and just partying.
Yeah.
We was like best friends that day. It was kind of weird. Like me and George just talking like, fam, this is what it is, bro. We just like, and we saw each other again at another party. Steven Spielberg do those like Emmy Oscar parties mm-hmm. where it's like crazy and
it's like
makes
everybody.
It's the most nervous I usually get because you see everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, it's Tom Cruise. Like, you know, it's like this is weird.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me he wrote a horror film. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, man. Good luck with that, brother.
Yeah.
But then he started describing it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, wait, you serious? This sounds crazy, bro.
Yeah.
He's like, yo, I may have you come in for it. I'm like, bro, I'd definitely love to come in for it. And my agent hit me up to come in for it. And I started, when I read it, the sides, I'm like, why does it sound like me? And I'm dead serious. I was reading it like, yo, this sounds like me.
I got hypnotized last night.
Nigga, get the fuck out of here.
Oh, yeah, to quit smoking. But it's Rose's mom's a psychiatrist, so.
Bruh, I don't care if the bitch is Ayanna Van Zant, okay? She can't fix my motherfucking life. You ain't getting in my head.
I know she called me off guard, right? But it's cool because I'm cured. It worked.
Bro, how you not scared of this, man? Look, they could have made you do all types of stupid shit. They have you fucking barking like a dog.
Flying around like you're a fucking pigeon.
Looking ridiculous, okay? Or, I don't know if you know this, white people love making people sex slaves and shit.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're not a kinky sex family, dog.
Look, Jeffrey Dahmer was eating the shit out of niggas' heads, okay? But that was after he fucked the heads. Do you think they saw that shit coming? Hell no.
Yeah, I was going to ask that because there is so much of you in that character in Rod. And so I wanted to know, is it...
I was like, if I don't book this movie, I'm a terrible actor.
How much did you bring to that, or was it all really on the page as you?
This is what I ended up finding out later, right? Watching interviews with Jordan that he wrote it with me in mind. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's why...
You could tell. I mean...
It was my cadences, is how I deliver stuff. I'm like, what is... This sound like me. And then when I got into that room... I really booked the role, not even from the funny stuff, is when we did the original ending in the audition room.
And that was part of the original ending was part of the audition?
Yeah.
Because that's an intense scene.
That's how I booked it.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And I remember being done with that scene because, you know, I remember at the time it was very emotional to do it, you know, especially what ended up happening. And I was outside trying to get my whatever back, waiting on my Uber. And Jordan Peele walked out there like, look, I ain't supposed to say this, but it's yours. But I'm like, my friends and they're about to audition. She's like,
yeah, don't worry.
It's yours. I'm like, what? And I end up just walking down the street. Like, I don't even know how far I walked. I was so happy. This me not even knowing what this was going to be. I was just so happy that, like, something I believed in, I was able to book. I walked for blocks.
Yeah.
Just tearing up, like, just so thankful.
And
man.
Even then, you had no idea what it would become.
But I felt, it's so crazy that I'm telling you this. Yeah. I felt something, but I didn't know what that was.
Yeah.
And all of us did. I think until the trailer came out, and we was doing reshooting the ending. And, you know, we were all like at like dinner, just having drinks or something. And I'm like, yo, I think this about to be a thing, bro.
Yeah. So for anyone who doesn't know, the original ending, you're visiting him in jail.
Yeah.
Chris, I really need to
impress on you the importance of remembering some of those names.
Okay, to finally leave us much to work with.
I don't remember.
All right, look. I just take it from the top, walk me through it again.
Right. I'm good. I stopped him, you know? I stopped him.
It's this very intense kind of
and he's
sad
giving up
ending.
On it. He's like, hey, man. Even though he's innocent, really.
Yeah.
He's defended himself.
Yeah.
But to sit there and say, like, it is what it is.
So how did, so when you, how
we
did you,
shocked
how'd
that
you
it was
find
intense,
out,
actually,
how'd too. You find out that it was going to change and that what'd you think of the new ending when you heard about it?
I'm glad, like when I saw the original cut with the original ending, it was just a different feeling when you watched it. I was angry. I couldn't even sleep because it was like, damn, man. Like, you know what I mean? So when Jordan came up with this better ending, which
I mean,
you know,
the ending is perfect. The
it's because it's a movie, man. Yeah. We already, I mean, but this also too, this is why, like, you know, when Queen and Slim come out, you know, it ain't do it. It's not, you know, they like, nah, this is how we gonna end it.
Yeah, well, it's a different kind of movie too.
Well, yeah,
in a way.
Yeah, and no, actually, the result ain't. It's a different type of movie as far as like one. It's more of a love story, Queen of Slim. But as far as, you know, the black plight,
same story.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you think the movie would have been? Do you think the reception to Get Out in a wider audience would have been much different if he had kept the original ending?
I think so. I think it wouldn't have been as main. I think it would have did well, but I don't think as far as Oscar nominated.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if it would have happened if we would have left it that way.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. The next one I wanted to touch on is the Jay-Z's Moonlight video, which I'm just fascinated by how that happened.
Gerard.
Yeah.
Gerard Carmichael, who's really cool with Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was it his idea?
Well, it was Gerard and like Shaka Pilgrim. Mm-hmm. I think they're just talking about it. And that was surreal to do. Mm-hmm. That, first of all, the group again, right?
Yeah.
The group, Lakeith, Tessa, Tiffany, Gerard, me, Issa, that was crazy.
When you're recreating Friends, of course.
Yeah, and then, what's my man that played Joey, for real? I forgot his name.
Matt LeBlanc.
He almost had, a problem with me playing him.
Really?
He Kimmel.
What'd he say?
And Kimmel showed the clip, and I think Matt was like, hey, I'm not that big, or something crazy. I'm like, bro, I didn't like the way he looked at it too. He looked at it like,
yeah.
And what they don't realize is, the video version, we reenacted their episode, which is like, whatever.
Yeah.
We did a version that we didn't film of us just change, same episode, but us doing it with our dialect and stuff. Mm-hmm. Man, was 20 times funnier than the episode that actually aired.
Why do you think that one didn't?
I don't know why they didn't want to do that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that was, I wish we would have did that just so it could be there. It was hysterical.
Or if it gets.
It was hysterical.
Yeah. Yeah. The other movie that you were in that became a crazy phenomenon, Bird Box.
Yeah.
Which I think you get a lot of questions about.
Yeah.
Because people are obsessed with that movie. Did you have any idea when you were filming that would be a phenomenon?
I didn't know if it was going to be a phenomenon, but I knew it was going to be good. It was such a good cast, man.
Yeah.
You know, you got John Malkovich, which that became one of my favorite people to talk to every day. Mm-hmm. He's a big basketball fan me. And he's a legit, because everybody be talking like they a basketball fan, but yeah, we was talking about Chicago high school basketball players. And he knew, Roddy Fields was great. I'm like, what? He knew. We would talk every morning basketball for hours in hair and makeup.
Yeah.
Me and John Malkovich.
That's fun.
To the point he started helping me.
He's a Chicago guy too.
Man, that dude is a worldwide guy.
Yeah.
That man has a winery and some crazy, he's like a spy.
Yeah.
He lives like a spy.
Mm.
I haven't talked to him since the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ain't seen him. He ain't come to the premieres. We don't know where yet.
He disappeared.
But he was so cool. Sandra Bullock, oh, she's so amazing. And, you know, every once in a while I text her and just check on her. She's so dope. Trevante, Rosa, Machine Gun Kelly. We all became friends. Because this is the way the director shot it. We was in that house for real. And we all died in order.
Yeah.
So when somebody died, they was gone.
Yeah.
You ain't see them no more. They didn't even say bye.
You shot the movie in order.
It was
that
crazy.
Yeah.
It was. That's why it was so intense for us. That's why it looked like it was real to us. Because it felt like, because at some point we didn't even know what time it was outside. We was in the house the whole time.
Yeah. It was almost like Big Brother or something.
Yo, it was crazy. Yes. We had lunch in there. I'm serious too. They wouldn't let us leave.
Yeah.
And I think she did that because it kept us with that, whatever that energy was. Mm-hmm. That's why I was so paranoid after I was done with it.
Really?
Yes.
What were you paranoid about?
Because it felt like it started feeling real to me, actually. Because just the way it was shot.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go home and still have these thoughts of this thing is happening.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. I had to get myself out of it. Watching Jim Carrey's documentary about him when he did the Man in the Moon joint.
Yeah.
That's what helped me get how to get out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he almost went insane.
You can't help it if you're diving into those worlds like that. You know what I'm saying? It's almost dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
You have so many movies coming up. Is there anything that you're, what are you working on right now? And what are you kind of excited about? You have one with Ben Affleck, right?
Yeah. So I shot 8 movies this year.
That's insane.
Which is, and they all dope too. It ain't it's crazy. So shoot, what did I shoot this year? I did The Photograph, which comes out Valentine's Day weekend. I did with Issa Rae, Lakeith Stanfield. Fatherhood, I did with Kevin Hart. Did a movie called Home with Kathy Bates. It's a drama. It's really good. It's actually what I'm doing ADR for when I leave here.
Oh, yeah.
Free Guy, which is, I think, the biggest movie I've ever done. I did with Ryan Reynolds, Sean Levy directing. That comes out 4th of July weekend next year. I mean, it looks amazing.
Yeah, that'll be a big movie.
It's going to be huge, bro. I only like to say that up front, but it is. It is what it is. You know what I'm saying? What else I got? I got Bad Trip with Eric Andre and Tiffany Haddish coming out next year. The prank movie, which is, I probably never do a prank movie again. Because it's too...
Was it real?
It's real crazy, man.
Was that Eric Andre's movie?
Yes.
Wow.
He wrote...
I'm excited for that.
Starring in... It's crazy. It was wild, bro. Yeah. It was one of... I almost quit the first day.
Really? Because it was too out there?
Man, we almost got killed. I was like, yo, I didn't sign up for this.
How, can you tell that story?
Yeah, I mean, it's a scene where we in a barbershop. Well, yeah, I say this. Mm-hmm. We was in a barbershop scene and... You know, we're stuck in this Chinese trap together, but you'll see what how we're stuck.
Yeah.
Now, they told us this is the barbershop with the security in and the cameras. Mm-hmm. They sent us to the wrong barbershop. Mm-hmm. So we walk in there. It ain't no security or no cameras. The dude see us walking in and asking questions. He gets mad, grabs his blade.
Yeah.
It almost looked like he was looking for a gun, couldn't find it.
Yeah.
Grabbed his blade, chased the anger in his eyes. I'm like, we about to die. So he chases out the shop. I fall to the ground. I hit my elbow. He got the knife over me like this. The cop that we had, be secured, had to almost tackle him to stop him.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, I remember just walking off set.
Yeah.
I called an Uber back to my hotel. Yeah. I called my manager. I said, hey, man, I quit. Mm-hmm. I almost got killed the first day. I don't want to do this no more. This is insane. Eric Andre is my friend, but he can kiss my butt. I'm done.
Did he talk you back into it?
Yeah, I don't know how he did too, because I was, when I tell you I was done, because I told her, I said, look, we can't be coming to the hood with these pranks, and it ain't secure.
Yeah, you got to up the security.
These hood dudes going to react differently.
Yeah.
The man was finna kill us. Mm-hmm. And then he signed the release like, oh man, I almost killed y'all, man. I'm like, what?
He just wants to be in the movie.
He didn't even, but I'm just, think about that. He didn't even know that at first that was a movie. Yeah. He was going to kill us.
Yeah.
Found out it was a movie, signed a release, like, oh, that's crazy. I mean, I actually really was going to kill y'all, man.
That's crazy.
Jesus. I was like, yeah, but that was, and it, look, it was a lot of, it's very intense doing a prank movie, you know, and Eric is used to doing that. And when you're not used to doing all these crazy pranks, I'm like, bruh, some of this stuff is, this is going, we got to, no.
That's
this,
wild.
This is too much. But it's it's
that'll
really
be fun,
funny.
Though. Yeah.
It's crazy funny.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, the way we end is I ask comedians, who's the funniest person you've ever worked with?
Ooh,
so who is someone who you've been on set with or just you know, killed you with comedy?
Dang, I think it's several people.
Who's you can mention more than one if it's a...
Yeah. The funniest person ever, well, Tiffany's one of the funniest people I've ever worked with, because Tiffany's hysterical. Gerard is really funny.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's just a really funny guy. David Allen Greer.
Mm-hmm.
Sinbad is hysterical. Hugh Moore.
Oh, yeah?
He played the bartender on my show.
Mm-hmm.
Hugh is one of the funniest people in the world to me. Jermaine is crazy. He's so funny. Man, I worked with so many funny people, man.
Yeah, you have.
Who was this? Ryan Reynolds is funny. You know who else is funny? Ben Affleck is, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just off camera. He's just...
What's an example of Ben Affleck being usually, funny?
He literally was doing his Donald Trump impersonation the other day for, like, the whole day. And it was really good, but it came out of nowhere, actually, which I was like, okay. And... He just started like saying his tweets like, it was just out of like, I don't know what we was talking about in between takes. And he just started doing it. And it was hysterical. He's just he's actually a really funny guy.
Yeah.
I work with so many funny people, man. I don't know. Everybody's been pretty much dope to me. Mm-hmm. You know, like everybody. I don't know, man. Like JB Smoove, you know, anybody that makes me laugh like a lot is that dude.
Mm-hmm.
He is one of the funniest people I've ever talked to.
Yeah, he just is who he is. And
he's like, man, it is what it is, man. You gotta get in. He met me before I even had kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when they was born, I think it was Brittany was a baby. And they met us at lunch in Chicago, him and his wife. And this is JB Smoove just looking at my baby. Look at that baby. Look at Lil Rel got a baby. Look at that baby. You his baby. Look at that baby. Got you a baby. Look at that baby.
That's great.
Yeah. That dude makes me laugh a lot.
All right, man. Thank you so much for doing this today.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah. It was fun.
Cool.
Thank you to Lil Rel Howery for being my guest on our last new episode of the year. Keep an eye on this feed over the holidays for some special treats, and we'll be back with brand new episodes in January. Live from Crenshaw is now streaming on HBO Go and HBO Now, and look out for Lil Rel in pretty much all of the movies coming out next year. If you enjoy the show, please tell your friends and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. And please follow at Last Laugh Pod on Instagram. The Last Laugh is distributed by Himalaya Media for The Daily Beast. It is produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch for Starburns Audio and engineered and edited by Mackenzie Mazzell. Our theme music is by Claude. You can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find this show every week on Apple Podcasts, the Himalaya app, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. Hope you have a great holiday, and see you soon.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.